You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Heading into Memorial Day weekend, it looks like the West divisions are kind of the same as a week ago. So the San Francisco Giants are on the verge of saying maybe they're running away with the division. And in the AL West, the Mariners are still having some good times in the Pacific Northwest, but the Texas Rangers are right behind them. So let's talk to the reporters about that.
Jane, I guess what we really need to start with is the fact that Sonny Gray is no longer going to be able to contribute to this rotation for a while. He's now on the DL. Does this seem to be a long-term thing?
No, not at all. I mean, he actually considers it pretty minor. It's just this feeling in the back of his shoulder and then like near his back. I know that Bob Melvin was saying it's kind of like pitching with a rock in your shoulder. And it wasn't necessarily affecting his velocity, but you saw it affect his arm slot, the way he was getting extension on the ball, and those things. I mean, you need those things for your command. And we've seen this season, Sonny's command just hasn't been what we're used to seeing. And I know that for a long time, you know, he kept saying he was healthy. And I think an injury like this, such a small injury, you know, I think for a pitcher, they're always pitching with little, aches and pains. I think it was probably easy for him to overlook. But after a while, I think it was kind of getting progressively worse. And he was feeling it affecting his pitches. So for him to, you know, come forward and say something, I think was important. So I think, you know, he obviously wants to be pitching. He wants to be contributing. But at the same time, there's a fine line where, you know, he felt like he wasn't even able to be contributing to the team just because, you know, his performance was obviously being affected by this injury. So they gave him a shot. It was like half cortisone, half anti-inflammatory to just kind of get things calmed down in that area. And so he'll just rest for a few days, and then they're going to get him back on the mound and, you know, playing catch, get him throw in the bullpen, maybe one rehab start. So it might not be the absolute minimum 15 days that he's out, but it shouldn't be too long after. But I think there's just kind of, you know, you never want to see anyone hurt, anyone going on the DL, but I think for him there was a little bit of a relief in knowing that, yes, there was something wrong, and it's something that, you know, we can control and manage, and it's something that, you know, definitely could have been affecting the way he was pitching. I think everyone on the club is in agreement that he just wasn't himself. And now we know it kind of wasn't, you know, any fluke thing, or, you know, they can kind of have something to point to. But the good news is that it's nothing serious.
Yeah, so let's just some insight into, like, what goes on between, like, a pitcher and his manager or the pitching coach. I mean, so he's having all these bad starts, and was he insisting that nothing was wrong? I mean, at some point, like, they can't really, I guess, just examine him and decide that he has an injury until he comes forward and says, I'm hurting a little bit. And I guess sometimes pitchers just don't want to say it, but at some point it becomes so obvious, right? I mean, this couldn't have been, like, something that just came out of the blue, given what kind of season he's had, which is he's been really bad lately.
Yeah, and the thing with him, though, it's strange because he said he's only been experiencing it for his last couple of starts. He said he first felt it in Tampa, which was just, not even 2 weeks ago. And he had, you know, one or two mediocre, poor starts before that, too. So, you know, he's not using this as an excuse for his whole season, but I think it could have been something that was kind of just creeping up on him, and he didn't really recognize the extent of the way it was affecting him until, these last couple of starts. And I think, you know, like I was saying before, I mean, not just pitchers, but, you know, no player is playing at 100% at any point during the season. I mean, everyone's, you know, playing banged up with, you know, they've got something or another going on, and you just play through it. I mean, that's just the way it is. And I think for someone like Sonny, too, someone who's never had to go on the DL in his career, he's never really been hurt in his professional career. I mean, he just doesn't, this is kind of all new to him. And, you know, so it takes, you know, something like this for maybe him to realize, you know, hey, this is affecting me. And, you know, it's a difference of, you know, helping my team and hurting my team. And he felt like at that point it was, you know, he was hurting the team more than he was helping it. And we saw it. I mean, he was laboring so much in his past couple of starts, throwing so many pitches, and just, you know, not effective either. And, you know, I think for Sonny, he's so good at what he does. He's so good at his craft that he was able to kind of get by for a while pitching like this. But, you know, even a guy like him, I mean, there comes a point where you just kind of have to shut it down, take care of the problem, and, you know, just hopefully never look back.
TR, you attended this press conference, so did this kind of come out of nowhere that the Rangers are going to want to build this new ballpark with a retractable roof?
Well, we knew the ownership group wanted a retractable roof stadium, and we didn't know what the timetable was, but I think one thing that happened when Atlanta announced that they were getting a new ballpark, that kind of opened to people's eyes that, hey, some of these ballparks may not have the long shelf life that they used to have. And I think the ballpark in Arlington has been a magnificent facility. I think it served the Rangers well, but I mean, it just never had the retractable roof. And now with the technology available, and it's just more practical than before. And I think it was just inevitable that the Rangers were going to do this. Their lease runs out at the ballpark in 2023 after that season. So places like Dallas, if they really wanted the Rangers, would have to wait until then. Arlington was willing to do it, move it up 3 years at least on the timetable, so that appealed to the Rangers. So all of that worked in favor of getting this thing done now.
So, we've experienced the heat at the ballpark in Arlington, and the fans really have to experience it a little bit more. So I guess the Rangers, from their perspective, it's not only, they probably see an increased attendance maybe, and maybe players wanting to play there a little bit more? I mean, explain that to me.
I mean, if you look at any city, it has weather you have to deal with, whether you're in Seattle in the rain or the East Coast in the humidity. I mean, Texas does have heat, and in July and August it gets very rough, and it's rough on players. You know, they had the All-Star game there in 95, and everybody was focused on the heat. You know, April, May, June, September, it's nice there, but, you know, you just can't get away from the heat in July and August. They play at night, it's still a problem. I'm sure it'll help attendance. They've always drawn well at the ballpark when they're winning. I mean, they draw very well there. They've always drawn well there. But, I mean, I think just the pressure and the desire for the retractable roof with what, you know, the Astros have had it for, what, 15 years now, and the Miami's come aboard. And I mean, it's just hard to ignore the fact that it's almost a necessity more than a luxury. You know, if you go back when the ballpark was built in 1994, Allison, there was only one retractable roof, and that was in Toronto, and the old Sky Dome, now the Rogers Center, and that was very, very expensive, and that really, you know, the province of Ontario really took a beating on that. So back in 94, it wasn't practical. It was just way too expensive. That's why they built the ballpark the way it was. You know, with Minute Maid Park and obviously Safeco, Arizona and Miami, I mean, it's just become more practical nowadays to do the retractable roof than it was in 1994.
Greg, I want to talk about Adam Lind to start off with, because he was kind of one of the guys that wasn't doing much this season, and then he just had this, like, burst of a game where he drove in a bunch of runs. And so I want to extend some love to him. So I don't think we've talked about him at all. So tell me about what he brings to the table here.
Yeah, Adam is the guy that they brought in that they expected to be a big piece of this kind of new-look team with the, you know, a high on-base guy with some pretty good pop and a very good history, one of the better hitters in the last few years against right-handed pitching, and they thought he's going to be a pretty key piece there at first base. He really has got off to a rough start, and he was scuffling along, hit about .216 going into last night's game with the and ends up getting two homers, six RBIs, 4-for-4 night, and kind of one of those games that you kind of just see what the guy can do when he's hot. You know, put hurt on the A's and wrapped up another series win for him in a big 13-3 victory. So interesting talking to him afterwards. You know, he admitted, hey, it's been fun watching this team win, but really nice to start participating. You know, he wants to be a part. part of this thing, and maybe putting a little pressure on himself as one of the new guys trying to show everybody what he can do, and just kind of needs to relax. So he's a guy that they're counting on, a pretty good bat there at first base, and certainly showed last night what he can do. Yeah, when you put two over the fence and six RBIs and doing everything, he had a double for an RBI as well. Just really hitting the ball well, and that's a key piece. As you said, they've had kind of guys stepping up everywhere, and that is a big key. They've ridden Cano and Cruz and those guys, but you need contributions from other guys, and they've really seen that, and that's why they're in first place.
Yeah, I think it's just so interesting, just the mental side of the game, because, you know, when you have a team, when things are rolling and everyone's comfortable in a way, then you can get like really great performances from people. When you have a team that's scuffling and then all of a sudden it's like it's up to like the same three guys or four guys even in the lineup, and then they can't really do much, and then it just sort of sends things into disarray. And I think there's a lot to be said about being able to enter a game. You know, you still have that adrenaline rush, of course, but to be able to enter a game kind of like relaxed from a mental standpoint, to just be able to know that that they're going to be okay no matter what.
Without question, it's tough when you feel like you're carrying the weight of the world, and this group has been really good with that from the start. And we've seen guys. You talk about guys you weren't expecting. Leonis Martin with a walk off homer, one of the more dramatic wins I've seen recently. The night before, down to his last strike. They're down 5-4 to the A's, and he hits a two-run homer. He's got nine homers. Leonis Martin is supposed to be the defensive guy that's running around in center field. He's got nine homers here, a career high already, 46 games into the season. And they popped him up to the leadoff spot, and he's really been performing well there. So, a lot of different guys doing things, and it does seem like a good vibe right now, which is great to see.
Yeah, he came over from the Nat Texas trade. That seems to be proving to be a very good trade. And he recently moved into the leadoff role, right? I mean, he hasn't been there the whole time, right? It's been like three or four games?
Yeah, just last Sunday they popped him in. The Norioki, one of the guys that really hasn't been as good as they had hoped so far, guy with a great history of on-base percentage and such, and really hasn't hit well. So they put Martin up to the top, dropped Aoki down to nine, and Martin has just been a roll. He's got a nine-game hitting streak. He's hitting .500 during that period and really doing everything for him. Did tweak his hamstring last night, which is something to keep an eye on going forward. They haven't had a whole lot of injuries, but that's one they don't think is too serious, but definitely a guy they want to keep in the lineup as hot as he is right now.
Alden, they swept the Mariners. They took 3 of 4 from the Dodgers. They lost 2 of 3 to the Orioles. So I'm trying to figure out, like, are they on a good trajectory right now? Because it seems like they're maybe starting to put things together a little bit. Maybe not. What do you think?
You know, yeah. Listen, all of that, maybe. I don't know what to make of this team right now. Just when you think they are out of it and that they have no chance of competing, they go on a run. And then when you think they're healthy and they're ready to go on a run, they struggle. It's weird. It's kind of weird the way this season has played out, but I give this team a lot of credit because they persevered through a lot of injuries, a lot of setbacks. They're starting rotation. They have, as we've talked about constantly, they have four injured starting pitchers, and they have the fourth best rotation ERA since May 14th. I mean, who could have That makes absolutely no sense at all. Who could have possibly seen that happen? Their lineup, if you look at their lineup last night, their bottom four hitters, they had Johnny Giovatella batting fifth, followed by Carlos Perez, Gregorio Petit, Rafael Ortega, and Shane Robinson, four guys with a lifetime batting average of .243. And yet, with a lineup similar to that, they have managed to be fourth in the majors in runs per game for the month of May, I believe. So, you know, they're putting things together somehow. Obviously not where they want to be. They entered this series finale against the Rangers four games below .500. But, you know, as we've talked about before, I think the only thing that this team needs to think about right now is they just have to find a way to kind of keep their collective heads above water until they start getting guys back. I mean, they have right now, if you count Tyler Skaggs on the minor league DL, they have 11 players injured. But it's very reasonable to think that by the end of June, every single one of those players except Andrew Heaney and Garrett Richards should be back. So they just need to find a way right now to just kind of keep going and to not fall completely out of the race. And, you know, you look down the road and, you know, they're going to get some guys back here pretty soon.
Yeah, and we've talked a lot about, of course, Tim Lincecum, but the stuff that we've talked about is like him being rumored to sign, then him signing. And now we can talk about actual baseball stuff. So he threw a recent bullpen, if I've got this correct, and then he threw a simulated game. So it sounds like he's got a couple starts coming at AAA, and then he might be ready to go, or is that being overly optimistic?
No, that's pretty much what he lines up as. He's going to throw another sim game in Arizona on Saturday, I believe. One of them's throwing Friday, one of them's throwing Saturday. It's hard to keep up, but he's going to throw a sim game in Arizona over the weekend. And then from there, it looks like he's lined up to make his first AAA start on June 2nd. And, you know, he's going to make at least two of them, but it may be only two. So he's going to be ready to go by somewhere between maybe June 12th to June 19th. I think that's what Billy Epler said shortly after they signed Tim Lincecum. So he's getting close, and Wilson is throwing in his first rehab game today, Wednesday, for Inland Empire. He is hoping to be back by early June. He's eligible to be activated off the DL by June 2nd, and he wants to be back by then. And Tyler Skaggs, who, you know, we talked about, he's been shut down with bicep tendonitis. He made three starts in AAA, and that's it. He's throwing bullpens again. And he's going to throw a simulated game in Arizona on Saturday as well. So he's getting close, too. And, you know, you look down the road now, and the Angels are getting some starting pitchers back. And, you know, at some point, there's going to be some tough decisions to be made with this rotation, which you would have never imagined given all their injuries. But Nick Tropiano is pitching well. Matt Shoemaker is coming off the best start of his life. Jared Weaver has gone back-to-back starts, completing seven innings. They have too many starters, Allison. Can you believe that?
No, I'll believe it when I see it.
Right.
Yeah, they had too many starters in March. And that
That's
was
true.
The end of that.
That's a fair point.
Brian, let's start with an article that you had on the Astros off day, just basically like outlining four or five things that need to happen for the Astros to turn this thing around. Number one, Dallas Keuchel has to become Dallas Keuchel again and fix whatever's going on with him.
Yeah, that's the number one thing. I mean, he's your ace. He's your horse. He's the guy that when you lose, you know he's going to stop the losing streak. You need him to take the ball and win games for you. He hasn't won a game since April 15th. And, you know, we all know he's been struggling with his command and his control, mechanics, velocity's down. So good news for Dallas is he still has 20-plus starts to get it together. But that's one of the things the Astros were banking on was Keuchel being Keuchel, what he's done the last 2 years. And, you know, if he's not pitching at that level, that just creates a big problem that they did not anticipate, and really they're not equipped to cover when you have a Cy Young Award winner who suddenly goes away. So that's first and foremost, he needs to get on track, and his next start will be Saturday at Anaheim.
And the other issue is there are quite a few holes once you get past the first four hitters in the lineup. There's a lot of kind of the same hitter, a lot of strikeouts, and that's presenting a problem. Obviously, some very low batting averages, and that has to change.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that could be a roster thing down the road. I mean, yeah, you one through four, you feel pretty good. Castro has moved up to fifth. He's been hitting the ball a lot better, so maybe he can settle in there. But Tyler White's going to have to come around. You're going to have to get something out of third base. Now, Tony Kemp hitting ninth here and there, that creates like a second leadoff hitter. Maybe he can get on in front of Springer, who's now leading off, and Altuve. But bottom line is some guys are going to have to perform that aren't performing. White, Valbuena, Castro's come around. We know what's going on at center field. Maybe Gomez will be back in another week or so, but you just have a lot of guys in the lineup that aren't performing, and the good hitters he's hitting up top, and they're carrying the brunt of the offense, but it has to be a 1-9 effort if they're going to turn it around.
A bright spot, the bullpen. I think we could say that they're having a nice little run. Ken Giles seems to be coming around. I mean, we're going to be talking about him until he probably is pitching lights out in the ninth inning, right? So slowly working his way toward that.
Yeah, you have all these options in the bullpen. All of a sudden, Giles is pitching great, touching 99, almost 100. Michael Feliz suddenly unhittable. Scott Feldman's throwing 95. Harris is doing what Harris has done. And all of a sudden, you're like, wow, they have all these options in the bullpen. Get them some leads. They can't get them the leads. So, I mean, that's the frustrating part. But Yeah, they have to feel good about what Giles is doing. His April is compared to his May, like his night and day. And he's more comfortable. Velocity being up is a huge sign. He was 95, 97. Now he's 98, hitting 99. That's the guy they traded for, not the guy we saw in April. So, yeah, if they have a chance to have a lead and close out some games, they have to feel good about it. But they haven't had many of those lately.
Okay, so now Alex Bregman, we need to start paying attention to him. So he has been tearing up Double A. Which is the barometer. I mean, you hear a lot that it's really the, you know, how they make the jump from single A to double A, and if they can do that and they start to show signs that they can handle that, it's more indicative than double A to triple A. So first remind us how the Astros drafted him, and then, you know, like what the situation was where they picked him first and then what he's been doing in double A.
Well, he was their number two pick overall out of the draft last year, the compensation pick they got for not signing Brady Aiken. So, very talented player out of LSU, a shortstop. And now in the last few days, last week or so, we've seen him move to third base. Not exclusively, but making some starts at third base, which answers a lot of questions about if he's this close to being ready for the major leagues. He's going to have to find somewhere else to play. By all accounts, he's handled third base very well. He's very athletic. He's just one of these guys that people say he's a ball player. He can handle anything you throw at him. But the numbers he's putting up at Double-A just can't be ignored. He hit his 11th home run, I think, on Monday night. At one point, he had 9 home runs, 9 strikeouts. Nothing phases this guy. So you have to think that a promotion to Triple-A is soon. I don't think we'll see him jump from Class Double-A to the majors like we did with Altuve and J.D. Martinez. But I think if he gets to Triple-A and kills it like he's doing now, I think we'll see him here sooner than later, especially if the club rallies and is in contention. I mean, if they fall out of it, I don't think there's any reason to bring him up here and rush his development and start his time clock and all that stuff. But, yeah, every day, you know, he's one of the guys you look at the box score to see what he does, and every day he goes 2 for 4 with a home run, it seems like. So very exciting to have that kind of talent. He'll be here at some point, but not right now.
Yeah, and I mean, we do need to, I don't know if it's like scale back the enthusiasm, but kind of temper the enthusiasm, because like they brought up Colin Moran, they brought up Tony Kemp, and those are, you know, fun, exciting things because they're young players who have come up through the system. But at the same time, we don't want to get ahead of ourselves and think that like these guys are just going to fix everything that is the problem with the team. Like, and you can't put that kind of pressure on a young player. Oh, okay. Well, we're 17 and 28. Now you guys come up and make us a 500 team. And there has to be like more that goes on beyond that.
Yeah, that's one of the things. Anytime someone comes up, they're like, "Yes, I've been waiting for this." But it's not that nothing is guaranteed at this level. And AJ says all the time, this is a hard game, and, you know, Kemp came up and got a couple of hits, but Moran struggled. I mean, AJ Reed could come up here and struggle for 2 months. And you know, Lance Berkman came up and didn't hit right away. Mike Trout didn't hit right away. I mean, it takes time. It's not like you're going to promote Alex Bregman to the majors and he's going to hit 350. It's not going to happen. So development is important, and taking steps is important, and putting them in situations where they're not just totally failing and falling flat on their faces is important. And I don't think the fans realize that stuff. They want all the top prospects up now, but there is a process, and you have to stick with it.